for our special work session on the budget. And I'll begin by reading our vision statement posted on the wall here. We envision a distinctive community that prospers while and by protecting its natural resources, with a sustainable economy and infrastructure that assures public health and safety while promoting personal development and initiative, and where all members take social responsibility and actively participate in decision-making affecting growth, development, regulation, and enforcement, and in which people retain a closeness with and caring for each other individually and collectively while working together to accomplish community goals and preserve community traditions. So we have one topic on the for our agenda here tonight, just a review and kind of a first run through with the council of the budget and opportunity for council members to ask questions and so forth. Our team of city administrator and treasurer have been working very diligently on this with me checking in on it once in a while. And so I'll turn it over to Tom to lead us through the process here.
Thank you, Mayor, and good evening. I'd like to start with a thank you to the department heads and the treasurer for assisting in developing this draft of the budget. They did a lot of good work in sitting down with us and going through what their needs and projections were. Also, thank the mayor for his review of our draft and helping work us through some of the line item expenses and revenues. So with the draft budget that was sent out, there was an introduction that gave you an idea of a little bit of the background. So I won't go over that again here. We'll go ahead and get started, and I will share the it's not coming up there. What is going on? Here we go. Great. Okay, so what I thought we would do is start at the beginning. Those of you that sat in and did some one-on-ones with the treasurer and myself know what this procedure looks like. We'll start at the beginning, go through the revenues. Then we'll go into the expenses. We'll save the wage expenses for the end. I think it's a little easier because that can get complicated jumping between spreadsheets. If there are any questions, if you just raise your hand, and if I don't see it, please go ahead and interrupt me and we'll be able to stop on that line item. All right, any questions so far? All right, terrific. So as I mentioned with those that sat in with us, we do a very conservative projection with our revenues. We rely on our trend, looking back over the last several years, research with different groups and agencies, such as the GVA and the Travel Industry Associations. And we're able to be pretty accurate in looking at our revenue projections for the upcoming year. We have a couple of anomalies here with COVID. So fiscal years 20 and 21 were unusual. And when you see the five-year budgets there, you'll see that those 2 years look a little different. So with admin fees, we don't really see any expenses for fiscal year 23. As you can see, we don't usually have any expenses. We do look at our business license fees. We do think that that's going to be above the 3,700, given what we are seeing this year in terms of business permits. So we think 3,700 is going to be a safe estimate moving forward. The donation lines, that input comes from the department heads. As you can see, the 1,800 library donation, that is up from what we had forecasted for fiscal year 22, and that increase is a reflection of input we received from the librarians. In the DRC columns, you'll see that we have an estimate of the land fees at $72,450. That is inclusive of the 5% increase that the DRC manager had requested. If the council does not want to do that 5%, we'll need to address that forecast as that number reflects that increase. You can see our first total line there is at the DRC income. That's what we're looking at in this rough estimate. Again, I emphasize that these are very conservative estimates at this point. Going into our federal revenues, we have a couple other unique line items. The American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA, we did receive, well, we haven't received it in the checking account, but we were notified that we're receiving $161,525. That could come in fiscal year 22, or it could come in fiscal year 23. We have a couple of these line items that fall into that situation. The reason I put it in fiscal year 23 is even if it comes in fiscal year 22, that amount will be above what our budget forecast for fiscal year 22 is. So it will be a carryover into fiscal year 23. You'll see we have our initial FEMA line item at $85,000. We already know that we have over this amount with two of our projects being reviewed, and one has been obligated, so those funds are in transit, and the other has gone through the FEMA review folks and is in its final phase of approval. We have two other projects outstanding. We actually think that this amount will probably reach somewhere around 115, 120. But again, my mantra, we are very conservative in our estimates. So we have 85,000 here. Now this, this line item, these funds have strings attached to them. They can only be expended on certain items. For example, road improvements. So we have a new light item in our expense area that is emergencies and disasters. And a good area to transfer this money into would be that line item. That would give the mayor and the council some discretion when we have an emergency, such as a COVID declaration of emergency or a weather-related declaration of emergency, and have those funds immediately available. So that is why we have identified these funds for that line item. Another line item that is restricted is the National Forest receipts. Those can only be used for schools and roads. And since the city doesn't have schools, school powers, we put that money into our roads. And that's the only place that these funds can be used. I have a placeholder there of 45,000. As you can see in recent history, 45 has been a pretty stable amount that we've received in forest receipts. One of the areas that gives me confidence with this estimate is our research, looking at what the feds are looking at in terms of timber sales. It looks like timber sales are going to be up given 2 years of COVID in which timber sales were way down. So we're pretty confident that we'll reach at least 45,000, but likely somewhere at 55 to 60. Our payment in lieu of taxes, just a brief explanation of what that is. Within the city limits, there is a certain amount of federal lands that are protected. They're not available for development. So the federal government provides us an amount equal to what they feel the taxable, if we had a property tax, what the taxable amount would be. And so this is an annual calculation. We receive PILT usually in April, along with National Forest receipts in April. And that amount listed is pretty consistent what we've received over several years. The only reason this would change is if we acquired more federal land or if the feds disposed of federal land. We're not aware of either one of those, so 113 should be a pretty accurate estimate. So our total federal revenue sits at around $500,000. So the next category of revenues are pretty self-explanatory. We have our ambulance billing, our sign-up program for ambulance service, and then once in a while, the volunteer fire department puts on some training and outside folks can attend and they pay a fee like CPR or other related types of training. So 150, we're hoping to see that next year. Our fire chief has done a pretty good job in arranging such trainings. So we think 150 is pretty accurate. And we hope it's more if we get those opportunities, but 150 looks like a safe estimate at this point. Interest incomes and lands incomes, those are standard that we've received over at least the last 5 years. I think it goes back as far as the last 7 years. Gravel pit sales, you can see where we had a bump in fiscal year, I think it was fiscal year 20, where we raised the cost per cubic yard. We expect to receive very similar to that amount, although given the pit leases we received, they were asking for more cubic yards than in the past. So this actually could easily hit between 28 and 30,000. But 25, we feel, is a pretty safe estimate. Lease income, we did have a bump this year. We did have our L3 Harris land lease out there by the towers. This is so L3 Harris, who has a contract with the FAA to put a dish on the ACS tower for the airport. We receive an annual amount. I think it's nominal, but it was an increase of what we've seen in the past. Marine facilities. We only forecasted 8,000 in 2022. That's because of COVID. We felt like we may not see the charter fleet come out as strong as it has. We have 8,000 in there now because we still haven't seen a lot of charters getting their commercial stickers. But you can see in 20, when we raised the rate in 2021, it went up to 18. We really feel it's going to be more around the 18 to 20,000. But again, we are very conservative in our estimates. So we held that at 8,000 so far this year. There was a slight bump in our private vessels. Again, we increased the registration fee by $1. And you know, that is a pretty nominal amount increase. So we left it at the 2022 estimate at $5,000. So our marine facilities is consistent with fiscal year 22, but as you can see in 21 at $28,000, we'll probably get to that one. Yeah, Lewis, please go ahead.
Tom, I was just, can you remind me, are any or all of those marine facilities revenues encumbered to be spent only in that category, or is that just kind of not earmarked for anything? We can spend it on whatever we want.
Thank you, Lewis. That's a good question. So when we receive funds for the general budget, we can't earmark those for a specific department upon receipt. That's similar to our donations. We receive the funds, they go into the general fund, and then during budgets development, we place funds into these different departments, and the council considers where those funds came from, and that helps in the decision of where to spend those funds. So no, those funds aren't obligated or earmarked as they go into our general fund. Now that's different than say national forest receipts or other encumbered funds, which have restrictions upon receipt of those funds, like from the federal or state government. Does that answer your question, Lewis?
Yeah, that's great. So typically, none of the revenues, at least the locally generated revenues, are typically not earmarked. They just go in the general fund. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Lewis. Okay, so state revenues. Our community assistance funds, our CAP, is currently sitting based on our old population estimate. Given that we went up to 658, we expect that this will grow somewhere between 15 and 20,000. Again, we haven't received that. And as you may know, the legislature did not pass this expense last session, and it is up this session for approval. In speaking with our state legislators, they believe that the cap will get approved. So we're anticipating that will go up. But again, for this rough draft, we're leaving it at last year's amount. If they didn't pass it, this would be a zero. And that would be a significant blow to our revenue. Moving into our tax incomes. We have it estimated right now at $375,000. Well, we know that we did an NCO. We moved money into our fiscal year 22 budget because we had outperformed our projections by a significant amount, and we wanted to update the fiscal 22 budget. That's why we're looking at $325,000. If we go back and we see some of the pre-COVID trends, we're near 400,000. And I think that's where we're going to land in fiscal year 22 and fiscal year 23. Just given what fiscal year 22 is coming in at, with all of the issues that we had to face in terms of COVID, long-term rentals versus short-term. As you know, long-term, anything over 30 days is not subject to our room tax. So we think that we're going to outperform this 375, but once again, we like to be very conservative in our estimates. Remote sellers, 35 we think is probably even going to be low given what we've received already. When we first started with the remote sellers, we had projected 20,000, and we've outperformed that already in 2022. And in 2021, that was the first year that we were receiving those funds. So it's good to see that that is growing. Room tax, again, it goes back similar to our retail tax. We had projected 40 because of the COVID season, but we believe we'll exceed that estimate significantly in that 2022 and 2023 will look more like what we've seen in 17, 18, and 19. We expect that this is going to be a good season for our room tax, given information we've received from DVA on bookings and the both state and national travel industry association. As I said in my introduction, when I sent the email out with this budget, there are some things that we're concerned about affecting our projections, especially when it comes to tourism. With the war, we don't know how that might affect cost of travel and interest in travel. But we haven't seen anything that would turn us to a less favorable projection. So we're going to stay with this 75,000 for now. And if something changes, that's an area we can update prior to approving the budget. So just summarizing here on our gross profits, you can see we have estimated conservatively $1,239,000. Again, that's outperforming the previous years. And I think that that trend, if we were to take COVID years 20 and 21 out, and we were to look at our trend slope, this would be right in line with that. So before I get into expenses, are there any questions on revenue? I can't see any hands, Mike.
Yeah,
okay. All right, great. All right, the fun or not so fun section, our expenses. In our administrative costs, you'll see that we have identified the audit that Phoebe has been asking for the last several years. Two reasons for this. One, when Phoebe took over doing the books, she reconciled the previous budgets and had a pretty high confidence that she did well, as reflected by our financial review that we had a couple years ago. And the other reason we have it identified is that if you receive $750,000 or more from the federal government, that that triggers a requirement for what they call a single audit. And we get all of the federal funds that we expect to get, we know we'll exceed that that amount. So this is serving two purposes. One, we really should have an audit. And two, we're likely going to be required to have the audit. Insurance is an area that we know we're going to have some increases. Our insurance agent has told us that we are going to see increases in several of our insurance coverages, but was unwilling to give us an idea of what that would look like because she doesn't have good numbers from the carriers herself. So we highlighted it here and we recognize that we're going to see an increase. And we have another one or two items down the list that fall into the same category. So we want to be aware of it. You don't expect it's going to be, you know, $50,000 or something like that, but 20 would not be unreasonable to expect. Most likely it'll be probably 15, 14 to 17 range, but want to make you aware of that. We should have better numbers come in April when we hope to be able to have the budget finalized for introduction. All our maintenance and repair account. That's where we put money in for repairs. If they come up, for example, if the heater goes out at City Hall, then we have money in our repair account to go ahead and get a new heater. Our contractual services represents our library maintenance, our putting out for bids. I'm having a brain freeze. And other services that we contract for, IT services, internet, that kind of thing. GVA, as you know, is asking for $39,000 this year so that they can do some more of their short films for their marketing campaign. The tools and equipment for the DRC and the marine facilities is so that they can do some of these repairs themselves. The DRC has been fortunate to have staff who can work on some of the equipment, and our marine facilities coordinator is also our handyman, and having the ability to do those repairs without having to go out and contract them saves us money in the long run. And the tools necessary for them to be more effective have not been purchased in the past. And this will give them some tools to be able to conduct our normal work. We expect that there's going to be an increase in shipping. Freight and shipping. We don't have a good feeling yet for what that's going to look like. But as you can see, in 22, we had a big jump. We estimated that we were going to see an increase in cost, primarily because of COVID. We also know that we've had an inflation spike. And again, the Ukraine situation and we're not real comfortable with being able to provide an accurate estimate for how that could go up, but we do expect it to. So that's why we have an increase on that line item. General liability is another one of our insurance coverages that we know we're going to have an increase. We just don't know what that amount's going to be. Down in our maintenance and repair for marine facilities, you'll see a large increase there. That's because we just realized that there is annual maintenance required for our steel float. We weren't aware of the annual maintenance list. Our marine facilities coordinator was able to come across what the annual maintenance would be. We haven't done it as long as he can remember. For one example, we have anodes that have to go on the steel float. Not only do we have to purchase the anodes, but it's going to require a diver to go in and attach them. We also have a face shield on the front of the steel float, which needs to be replaced. So we think $15,000 of this $18,000 is going to go for the maintenance of the steel float. And once we get past this year and we're back into an annual maintenance, this should go down significantly.
Tom, what about the moving the steel float? Is that included in that? Or
That's in our contractual services.
Okay.
And as you know, we are still kind of up in the air of what that number is going to look like. We hope to have that again by spring, and then we'll tighten it up. It isn't going to be that much. I don't think it's going to be that much more than what we already have, given what we heard from Alina. If we're able to do that going through HUNA, that should cut the cost down from what we were hearing from the tug service in Juneau by about 2/3. So we're hoping that that's going to be the situation.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to bypass payroll for right now, and then we'll come back to that in just a moment. We had an increase in professional services. We have been asking for advice and reviews from our city attorney this year. I think it's been very productive. One good example is the HUNA Indian Association's purchase of the Gustavus Inn helped giving us some guidance in how we approach that trend, that turnover in the business, and what we will be looking at in terms of taxing, and so we can have a better idea in looking at revenues for our budget. The attorney also does reviews of our ordinances and resolutions that are unique or have legal elements to them. And they recently raised their rates, first time that they've raised their rates to the city. And so there was an increase in the billable hour amount as well. Here you'll see that emergency disaster fund. So when we get the additional FEMA monies, we have a choice of putting it into this fund or using it for some other purpose, say additional road projects.
Maybe I could say something about that.
All right.
the idea here is to have money in an emergency budget line that isn't, or that we can dip into if we have a big, say a big major storm, damage to our roads, damage to a bridge, or who knows what, and that we don't have enough money in any other budget line to deal with that emergency situation. So by having an emergency response line here, we have a source that we can go to immediately and cut a PO with a contractor to do repairs or whatever. We don't have to do an NCO to move money, especially for that disaster. But the idea is that if we don't have a disaster, then we don't use this money and we just roll it over into the next year. So we're trying to use some of the money we're getting back from FEMA and invested in being better prepared to respond to emergencies. And I see Lewis has his hand up. Lewis?
Yeah, Mike, where did the $85,000 figure come from? Is that just carried straight across from what we got from FEMA this year?
Tom, you want to answer that? It wasn't particularly tied to any specific expectation, I think, but seemed like a reasonable amount, but go ahead.
Right. So again, when we were in revenue, we saw that line item of $85,000 under FEMA. So what we know is that our debris removal project has been obligated. So those funds are in transit to our bank account. We also know that we have another one of our project lines within the FEMA recovery that has been approved by the initial review team and is at final review for obligation. Those two alone exceed the $85,000. What we have left are three other projects that we expect will bring in somewhere around $25,000. So we're very confident that the $85,000 estimate will be achieved. We, as I mentioned, we can't spend it on just anything, but we can spend it on things like emergencies and disaster response, roads, and of course, airports and transit, which we don't have, utility. So that's how the $85,000 got placed in this newly created line item.
And so those funds, they're a bit encumbered for what they're spent on. Are they also, is there a use or lose it element to these funds? Do we have to spend them by a certain date and otherwise they go away?
Nope, these are reimbursement funds. As you know, we had to spend a lot of money on post-flood repairs and recovery. We increased our road budget to help cover those expenses, yet still have enough money to do snow plowing and the spring thaw work that has to be done every year. So the funds are ours because they're reimbursements. We have applied for some state FEMA money for mitigation that would be preventative projects, but we haven't received any indication whether or not those have been approved. So they're not listed on this draft.
Gotcha. Thank you.
All right. Okay, so we have our road maintenance. As you can see, it's still listed at $150,000. We at City Hall have received several very complimentary comments from folks. A shout out to Glacier Bay Construction for all the work that they've done in both the flood recovery and the snow removal. I'm sure we all have felt the pain in one form or another with the heavy snows we received this year, and roads are going to require a little TLC come spring to whip them back into shape. So 150 also recognizes there was an increase in previous road maintenance contract awards, and we also have additional work that we need to do to help prevent some of the flooding that we've seen with the heavy snows from this season. So 150, we think it may be a little bit on the low end given the work we want to do, but we also recognize that we're going to have FEMA monies come in that would be able to help with the roads. And we also have our lost revenue funds that could also be used for roads. There's an increase on the stipend line item. This is for the volunteer fire department. There was a request to fund gym memberships, and the purpose is to have the volunteers' readiness improved for the strenuous work that's involved in fighting fires and other emergency responses. There's a program developed that would require a certain amount of participation by volunteers to qualify for use of this membership. And that number reflects the $3,000 stipend that we've been providing over the last couple of years and the additional funds for the gym membership at the Gustavus Community Center. We have an increase in supplies for all departments. It's the same as what we had proposed for fiscal year 22, although fiscal year 22 did have COVID supplies baked into this number. But what we're seeing is an increase in cost of supplies, probably because of the inflation and the cost of transportation. So we're confident that this number isn't too high or too low. That could change given some of the ongoing uncertainties that I mentioned earlier. But we feel like in order to keep our departments running, this was a necessary expense. We added $500 to the training budget here, and that's to accommodate our two new outstanding librarians to get some additional library training. It's the same training our previous librarians had gone through. This time we have two new librarians that both need it. And so in addition to all the hard work they put in to get the scholarships, we still think that $500 added to that training line will help us ensure that when the opportunity comes up, they'll be able to attend. We won't have to transfer funds around. A slight increase in travel, that is to accommodate what we expect to be an increase in gas. We have a similar increase on insurance down in our vehicle line items. Our insurance agent didn't say that we would necessarily see one here for our city vehicles, but I highlighted it just to be aware that it is possible we have an increase. It shouldn't be that much if we do get one. We only have a couple of vehicles. Going down to our other income line items, you can see in previous years we had, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, Tanya.
Thanks, I wanted to ask a couple questions before I forgot them and we got too far along. I'm just curious, how many people are on the volunteer fire department right now?
I do not have a number. I'm assuming you mean active participating folks.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just asking because I divided 10,000 by 250 and that's 40. That's gym memberships for 40 people, which seems like a lot, but I really actually don't know how many people are on that. So that might be a little high.
Right, the 3,000 stipend is the money that we give the active volunteers to help cover fuel costs and vehicle maintenance that they use their vehicles in response to calls. And for example, the state of our roads right now being what they are, damages to their vehicles wouldn't be unexpected.
I was referring to the gym membership. I'm assuming the Gustavus Community Center, right?
Right. So that's $6,000. And
I thought it said $10,000. Can you scroll up?
So 3,000 of that is part of the regular stipend.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And the other 7 is the gym memberships. And again, We don't know if it's going to be that much. It's based on those volunteers that want to participate with the gym. They brought forward the request to the fire chief.
Okay. No, I think it's a great idea. I just was, I didn't realize there was other money. It seemed like a lot for just the gym. And can you scroll up to contractual services?
Okay.
So on the version of the budget that you sent us, that line for contractual services, where last year it was 39,000 and this year it's 79,000, in the version you sent us, because I was looking at it, it's 39,000 for both years. Is that supposed to be a big increase there?
trying to remember exactly what else we put in there. When we budgeted for the steel float in 22, we thought we were going to be spending $10,000 a year. We were not able to have that same arrangement. And then the next estimate we received was going to be $15,000 each way, so $30,000 in addition. We're hoping that we'll be able to utilize the same folks who just recently moved the steel float, and that should save us, well, probably half of that amount. Yeah, so I would have to get our line item breakdown to get all of the different areas that go into contractual services. And I can do that and have that out for you tomorrow.
But the increase of $40,000 is, I mean, I'm just curious, it's because of the floats mainly?
Primarily, we were thinking that it was going to be $10,000 when we did it in fiscal year 22. And then when we found that that wasn't going to work, it looked like it was going to be $30,000. And then we thought, okay, then there's going to be an increase to that cost this year. But I think there's some other expenses in that line item, and I just can't remember on the top of my head.
Okay, that's fine. I got really confused because I'm jumping back and forth to the spreadsheet that you sent out, and it's different, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that is. So I'll have to check.
Well, one key point here too is we're trying to be conservative, which means estimating high on expenses. And we're not certainly not going to spend any money that we don't have to spend by estimating high. That may cover some things that could come up that we may not be anticipating too. So it doesn't hurt to go high on an expense item like this, just to be sure that we've got enough to cover whatever we need.
It's a good question though. And we'll follow up on that and we'll have something out to the council in the morning.
Okay, thanks. That's for now. Thank you.
All right. Okay, so we're into our other income and expenses. So with our encumbered funds, you'll see we have funds coming in from previous years, but nothing in 22. So we had been receiving National Forest receipts, and we had a large savings that had been funding our road maintenance program. We used all those funds up, and those then, the road maintenance fund was then paid for with general fund savings. So that's why we don't have anything in 22 or 23. Under this line item. We no longer have those encumbered funds. Now, if we get federal funds that are encumbered, like FEMA or National Forest receipts that exceeds our road maintenance expenses, then we'll be able to put that back into our savings account, and then we'll be able to use those funds at future budgets. So we have our prior year cash balance. We believe this is a really low estimate of $60,000, just based on where we are already in terms of exceeding the budget forecast last year. As I mentioned in the email, when the council was developing the budget, there was a lot of concern that we would not see a lot of visitors, and therefore our revenues would suffer significantly. Fortunately, we did receive quite a bit of visitors, and our revenues did quite well. Again, we made that adjustment in revenues in the income portion of the budget. With all that taken into account, we believe that the $60,000 is a very conservative estimate of what we'll have left over at the end of the fiscal year. Okay, so now I'm going to go back up to our wages before we get to the bottom line. Here we go. Okay, well, I didn't. Oh, there we go. Okay. So here is the spreadsheet that reflects the work that the mayor and council members did you want to talk? Right. So we can see here that in the highlighted areas changes, and you'll also notice down at the bottom some narrative to go along with the numbers. Right.
So
the mayor said that these numbers in wages includes the 4.9% COLA increase. So we moved the clerk up and increased her wage to 27. We increased the treasurer's wage she came off probation last week. So it's been a standard practice that upon completion of probation that the employee would get a bump. So this reflects that bump in the COLA. We increased the hours of the administrator, the clerk, and the treasurer. The clerk only increased 2 hours a week. So it's a nominal amount, but it does cover time spent at projects like the elections, cleaning up our old files, projects that are difficult to accomplish on a regular 30-hour work week.
You want to say something about more Friday being open on a Friday?
Thank you, Mayor. And the mayor wanted to see a little more public access to City Hall. So we're going to open for 5 hours on Fridays, and that'll be covered by City Hall staff. Some of you may remember a couple of years ago, 2019 and 2020, we were opened on Friday, or we were working on Fridays. We were only open by appointment, folks that needed notaries or had to drop something off. We would be able to provide them service for those types of requests, but we weren't open to the general public. We also see at the DRC a new position. This is the operator position that the DRC manager had been looking for last budget cycle. As we get closer to the retirement of our outstanding DRC manager, We need to get some of that institutional knowledge passed off into our staff, and getting an operator to help share some of those tasks and absorb some of that knowledge is important. If we don't, the learning curve will be nearly impossible given the pace of work at the DRC. So we have here an addition of the operator at $21 an hour, and you can see the hours worked.
Paul's hours go down.
And the impact of having that extra position is that the DRC manager's hours are cut back, and the ability then for him to focus on the management side of it and less on the operational side will help bring some of his work up to date. We also have an increase in the assistance. I believe it was 850. Okay. It went up from 712 hours to 1,016 hours. If you've been down at the DRC during summer, you can appreciate the volume and the workload going on at the DRC. The additional hours will allow for a safer work environment and you know, less fatigue and stress on the folks that work there. The fire department has two additional positions. Those are our testers, our COVID testers that we talked about when we heard that the funding for the program was going to stop effective January 31st. So we have the two positions. We have a summer schedule and a winter schedule. Clearly the summer schedule is going to have more hours because of the jet and the amount of activity we're going to see with visitors. Marine facilities has a small increase in hours from 850 to 900 and an increase to $25 an hour. You'll also see in the library that we've increased the wage from $20 to $25 an hour and increased the hours worked to allow them to continue with the great work they're doing down there. The additional programs that we're hoping will get implemented with that extra time. The library assistant is the current position that is being filled to work on the cataloging. They find that there is quite a bit more that needs to be done with the cataloging. And in addition, the person who is filling that position has, I believe it was 12 years of library experience, and is helping both of our directors with library practices. And she has been a tremendous asset for them and the library, and therefore the community.
Lewis and Joe VanderZanden have questions.
All right, Joe, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, I was just looking at the library lines there. I don't know if I missed something, but I didn't understand how you can have one director at three quarter time and the other one at just over half time, making the same wage, and yet they both total $39,000, and the total at the end there is $47,700, and the other one is $45,000, and yet they're almost a third apart on their hours. Wondered if you could explain that.
Sure. Actually, if you look at the hours, they're the same, 1560. What you're referring to is the full-time equivalents area where it's showing that there's, you know, three quarters for the library administrative director and about half time for the services director. The FTE just represents what the established full-time equivalent was set at. The hours themselves are the hours that are actually going to be worked. And as far as the totals differing, I think that has to do with the health insurance. Is that right, Eduardo? I think that's what it was. You know, one's at $2,400 for the stipend, and the other is taking the insurance. So that's the explanation on the total amount.
Yes, so the FTE thing is really an obsolete column there. That just shows what we had in the past, but it doesn't really refer to what the budget is this time.
So did that answer your question, Joe?
Yes, thank you.
So Lewis.
Lewis, also. Yes.
I had a similar question, and I think there might be value in updating the FTE, because that kind of matters. That's sort of, in some ways, seems to reflect our intent for how many hours each position would work, and we need to reflect changes in that somehow in the budget.
We can do that. We can change the FTEs. Just some background on the FTEs. That program, those numbers were imposed to the budget process. They're not in ordinance or in resolution. And so when we made changes to the total hours, as the mayor mentioned, the FTE was thought of as obsolete, at least in this budget process, because we were going with hours over full-time equivalents. And it certainly could be better reflected either by removing that column or adjusting them to show, to match up with the hours. So we will make that change, and that'll go out with the updated budget tomorrow. Yeah, Tanya?
Yeah, thanks. Could you just go through, and I didn't quite catch how much hours are being increased, because we don't have a comparison for last year. So could you just go through the positions that are increasing hours, and maybe say, like you said, the clerk 2 hours a week, what about administrator and treasurer? And could you go through them like that?
Sure. So the administrator is going from 30 hours a week to 37 hours a week. And the treasurer is going from, I think it was 23 hours to 25 hours to 37, similar to the administrator. A reduction in the DRC manager, the new position, obviously. An increase in the assistants, the temp positions at the DRC, from 712 to 1,016.
Tom, I've got a question. Going back on the treasurer's hours, of course, we had Phoebe helping also in the past, and so she was picking up quite a bit of work. And so without her here also contributing to the finance team, we have to boost more hours to our new treasurer. Is that correct? Is that, am I stating that properly?
Sure, and we also have to acknowledge that we have a new person in the position. And Phoebe was somewhat of a phenom. She did an excellent job, had been doing it for many years. And so what she could do in 25 hours, clearly it was going to take somebody else
a little bit longer,
significant amount more.
Yeah.
So that that explains the treasurer position. The librarians, so they were doing 20 hours a week. There was a lot of work that could have been done in addition to what was being done. This is a consistent suggestion from previous librarians. Many of them complained that they could not stop what they were doing just because they had hit the clock. They had to complete projects. They had people that needed access. There was a ebb flow to the volunteers. I understand that they're staffed with volunteers at a sufficient level right now, so that should help. We have librarians that are new to the position, and that learning curve just takes a little bit more time. And so that's why we increase the hours for the librarian positions. What I can do tomorrow when we send out this update is send you the fiscal year 22 spreadsheet for pay, and you can do a one-on-one comparison if you like.
Can I say, I wanted to add something else about the administrative hours and so forth.
Sure.
I proposed more administrative hours because we have tremendous opportunity now to make use of the infrastructure funding and other grant opportunities to really get some good projects done for the city. And I do a lot of the design and contract documents and so forth for those. And I'm not asking to be paid. I don't care about that. I don't need it, but I want my, I need more hours from the administrative staff to support that work. And when it comes to identifying grants and applying for them, even if we contract with a grant writer, which we hope also to do, it takes time to identify the opportunities, describe the projects. If we're using a grant writer, to get a description to the grant writer, to work with the grant writer and manage that grant writer to get the funding coming in to do the projects. And then we have to do the contract documents, put them out to bid, manage the project, document the project, and provide all the documentation that's required back to the granting agency to for us to get our full reimbursement on the project. And all of that takes a lot of time. And it's really worth it to invest that time in the additional hours for our administrative staff to leverage those hours to bring in what really can be hundreds of thousands of dollars or even millions of dollars of projects, especially if we get the wave barrier at the dock, for example, which is one of our top priorities. All of those, we are leveraging the extra hours for the administrative staff to bring those projects in and get them managed through to completion. And so I really need the help of more hours from the administrative staff. And so that's why I've asked for this in the budget.
Any other hands?
Oh, looks like Lewis's hand is up again here.
Yeah, thanks. I think Tanya is really onto something with respect to trying to make sense of some of these increases in numbers of hours from one year to the next. And Tom or Eduarda, I'm wondering, rather than, or perhaps in addition to providing last year's spreadsheet to complement this year's spreadsheet. I wonder if you can just add a couple of columns that reflect the changes from one year to the next so that in a glance, we can see those changes. I mean, maybe you can just get rid of it, the FTE column, and replace it with something else. But I mean, I want to be able to support these changes. And I expect some members of the public may ask some questions that we'll be better positioned to answer if we can quickly access the numbers that matter in terms of things, especially things that are reflected in increases in expenditures. Thanks.
Sure, we actually have a spreadsheet. You know, I think you're all aware that I worked with Bella and Kyle to try to come up with a basic recommendation on hours for these various positions and pay rates. And I've got a spreadsheet that we used that I can share with you to that actually shows what those changes are and how they build up, so you can see how the hours change, the rates change, how much was COLA and so forth. So yeah, we can get that spreadsheet to you. Looks like Tanya's got her hand up again too. Or unless Lewis, did you have more to ask on that?
No, thanks. That helps, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you. And Tanya has her hand up.
Yeah, thanks. And yeah, I just want to reiterate what Lewis said, that it, you know, the more we understand it, the more we can get behind it and support it and answer questions in the community. So that's where all my questions are coming from here. So I see actually that the hours increase are at the bottom of the spreadsheet there. I didn't see that before. But I'm curious about the COVID testers. It's great that we're going to fund testing. It's quite a few hours, 1,444 hours, which divided by 52 weeks is 27 hours a week. And so I guess I'm just curious, we don't know what's going to go on with COVID. You know, hopefully we won't need to test forever, right? But isn't that more than I mean, I know now our testers are working a lot right now, but usually it's just like 9 or 12 hours, right? So just curious about why that there's so many hours allotted for that.
So we're looking at for the summer, 224 hours, and in the winter, we're looking at 36. We're doing two testers in the summer and one in the winter. This is following the same outline that we have for our current program, except we're just doing it for 3 days. For I think it was 4 hours a day, if I remember right. So this was what the fire chief had proposed as a need for people to be able to cover the jet and also be able to cover folks in the community. I don't know if I answered your question, Tanya.
Yeah, I'm guessing that it would be helpful if we, I agree those hours look high on the spreadsheet here. So maybe if we charted out the whole schedule and we'll double check those hours and what the plan is. Also, it's possible if the risk level drops down to a point that, or the recommendations from the state change regarding testing, that we may not test for the whole year. It's one of those things that's up in the air to see how the pandemic progresses here, or we hope disappears. So we may find that we need less, much less testing, you know, going forward. But I think it's prudent to plan for a significant amount of testing. And then if we don't need to, we don't spend it and we stop the program. So, but let's chart that out and get back to the council with that specifically, how would, you know, how those add up, you know, week by week through the fiscal year. It's a good point there. So thanks guys for asking that.
Yep. Were there any other hands there?
I don't see any other hands up now. So are there any more? Did you need to hit the bottom line or anything on this?
No, we kind of talked about those.
Yeah. I think we're projecting quite a large surplus. And, you know, that's another thing that's behind my request for more hours. We're applying some of the revenue. We have substantial revenue, and it makes sense to me to put that revenue to work for the community. And we can do so by increasing the hours of some of our staff. And actually, we've added the position at the DRC and so forth. So it will add to the service quality for the community.
Okay, so if we switch this spreadsheet back over to the main budget, here's the translation. You can see we have an increase in here representing the changes on that payroll spreadsheet. So any other questions on payroll before we drop to the bottom? Okay. So we get to the bottom and we see that we have right now around $275,000 in excess. We know that we have about 250 in one-time payments from ARP and the lost revenues. We also recognize that we have a very conservative estimate in our revenues for this budget at this point. The timeline for tightening this up is really until April, we don't have final numbers. For example, the federal monies have historically come in early to mid-April. We also have the final quarter of our tax period coming in that isn't reflected here. We also know that we'll have most likely a significant increase in our cap from the state, and that we hope to see continuous growth in our commercial sectors, and our sales tax revenues will continue to follow the upward trend. So this through this cycle, we also feel that the budget will more than balance, and by April we'll have a pretty good idea of what the carryover will be from 22 to 23. So for me, my next steps will be to get out those updates that were brought up. I'll get a breakdown of what the contractual differences were, and we'll get out the payroll spreadsheet that Mike was referring to that has a better comparison. And we'll also do a verification on the testing hours with the fire chief. And I hope we can get all that out to you tomorrow. I expect we can. And unless the council wants to have another work session, the next process will be on March 16th. We'll hold a town hall for the budget and we'll have an opportunity to hear from the public. Are there any other questions concerning the budget presentation? If you do get more questions tomorrow, Friday, next week, don't hesitate to contact us and give us your ideas or suggestions for changes that we can then put forward, get it to the mayor. Yeah, if you want
this
more
detail. This is Jim Misoviak. I have my hand up. I don't know if you can see it.
I think Jim Mack has a question maybe.
Okay, yeah, Jim.
Actually, it's not a question. It's more of a compliment. I appreciate the conservative approach you take on both expenditures and income. And I think that the fact that we're having the, people are going to go over the budget for us there is a great idea. The audit. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Okay. Well, that concludes my presentation. Thank you very much.
Okay, that was what we had on the agenda. Does anybody else have anything they wanted to kick around? We can do that in a work session. We're not limited to what was on the agenda for a work session because we're not taking final action on anything or voting. So does anybody else have anything they wanted to raise up? Any of the council members, that is. Looks like Lewis has a hand up. Lewis?
Yeah, thank you, Mike. I gave you a little preview earlier today of just a conversation I wanted us to have, and none of this is intended to affect this budget at all, really. It's just that we were talking about, we're talking about money, and I just wanted to introduce an idea and a question for the council to think about and maybe chat about if anyone else would like to besides me. I too really appreciate the approach to budgeting that involves, conservatism on both sides. You sort of underestimate what you anticipate getting on the revenue side and you overestimate what you're going to spend on the expenditure side. And it looks like even before we take that into account, we're about $275,000 in excess for this cycle. That's good, or at least we think that's good. And I kind of want to back out to 30,000 feet and look at our financial position right now as a city. It looks like we've got about $4.3 million in our savings account or accounts and about $1.4 million in our endowment account. And every year, in recent years anyhow, we've rolled over some of that excess into our savings account. And so the savings account keeps getting bigger and bigger. And that's good, at least on its face. It gives us rainy day money to spend, especially on big ticket items that we didn't anticipate. And my question then is, how big do we want that savings account to get before we declare victory and success? Or do we not? Do we just let it keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger and call ourselves heroes? Because I know there are people in this town who have some questions every year around this time about things like fees and taxes in the context of our having exceeded expectations and socked more money away every year. I don't intend to make a value judgment on that one way or the other, but I would like to have a conversation about whether it's worth defining in a quantitative way a goal for the savings account, at which point, when we reach it, if we haven't already reached it, maybe consider a different approach to our budgeting. And I'll just leave it at that and see if anybody else has any thoughts. Thanks.
Thanks, Lewis. That's a consideration that we've sort of had to keep in mind for many years. And for a long time, the city was, of course, very conservative and tended to sock away the most of the excess. That excess that we build up in the savings account is largely what we use for capital projects. So we appropriate out of that excess to fund specific capital projects that the council approves. And they could be road jobs or drainage projects or building onto our addition onto City Hall was done that way, and so forth. So we actually draw out of that regularly to fund capital projects. And it's quite likely that with some of the grants that we are anticipating applying for, we will, for example, have a match requirement. And so we can leverage money out of our savings to represent, say, a 25% match or a 20% match on a project that otherwise the feds or the state are funding. So our savings has grown somewhat over the years, but in the last few years, our total assets have stayed a little over 4 million, 4.2, now 4.3 as I look at the sheet right now. That represents those savings minus the expenses that we put to capital projects. And out of that 4.3 million, the endowment fund I see is actually 1.6. I told you 1.4 off the top of my head earlier today, but it's really 1.603. It's grown substantially. So that's a piece that we hold kind of separate because we have a separate sort of use for it. And some of the rest of our savings account, some of the rest of that 4.3 million that we have in the bank is actually already appropriated for specific capital projects that we just haven't done yet. So that extra funds there is a mix of some that's available, some that's just in a savings line for. Oh, it also includes our repair and replacement fund that we put money into every year, and we don't. That's not touched unless we need it for a specific. Say we had to do a big repair on City Hall or something like that, or the harbor floats or whatever. So some of those line items are actually you might consider them encumbered because they're for specific uses. Some have been appropriated already, but we could probably give you a better idea of what is actually the sort of unappropriated savings in general that we have there, but I can estimate it. It's probably a couple of times our operating budget. But that's something we could probably outline for you, or the treasurer could outline for you better in a future meeting than I can do off the top of my head. Looks like Tanya has a question or comment on that, I'll bet. Tanya.
Yeah, thanks. I guess the one thing that's it's great that we have a balanced budget. It's really it's good to see. I'm still confused about that extra $100,000 that comes from savings at the end for the roads. It seems to me that if it's in savings, I don't quite understand how we consider it income. But I remember last year, it seemed like, well, we talked about it last year, and we haven't really talked about it since, that the fact that our roads are actually not necessarily are always paid for because we don't have those forest receipts anymore, and that we've been dipping into savings to cover our roads, and that was like the one non-sustainable aspect of the budget. It seems like this year we've got it covered, but we also have these kind of single year ARPA and maybe the FEMA money and some other things that we maybe can't rely on in the future. So I don't want to lose that conversation. It came up last year, and I remember saying we need to get our roads covered, and I remember Phoebe saying, yes, you do. So I don't quite understand it enough, but I mean, it seems like this year we're doing great, and maybe that'll continue to be the case in terms of generating revenue from our taxes that would cover our roads. But I just was wondering if either Mike or Tom or anyone would speak to, especially for the new council members, the sustainability of covering our road maintenance without those forest receipts anymore. Thanks.
Sure, Tanya. Subject dear to my heart for many, many years since I've worked on roads since we first became a city. And early on, the city intended to fund all its road maintenance with forest receipts funding. And the intent of the early councils was that if we ran out of forest receipts, if it disappeared, that road maintenance would go away, be back to pass the hat, an idea that I never liked, of course. And in those early years, we had substantial payments from the forest receipts program. I think we got as much as $150,000 one year. And we were being fairly conservative in how we were spending our money. And we typically were spending less than $100,000 a year in those years. So the forest receipts, we were putting out the excess that we didn't spend each year into an encumbered account with the idea that when the forest receipts program dropped down or went to zero, we'd have at least a few years of savings that would cover roads going forward. Well, so we've used that funding first because it's encumbered. It's the only thing that it can be, roads are the only thing it can be spent on. So rather than appropriate out of our regular budget lines for several years, we just kept using the savings out of the forest receipts fund until it was gone. that just means that roads need to compete with all the other things in the budget when we're doing our budget in the spring. There's nothing special about roads. It's not more important than the fire department or the library or anything else. We have to make the case for what's needed in each function that we fund and sort the available revenue across those to provide the services, a service level in each of those functions that we feel best meets the community's needs. So going forward, roads will just compete with everything else in the budget. And the sort of unusual thing in the last couple of years is we managed to get a lot of road work done that we're essentially charging to FEMA. It was in doing the flood repairs, we were covering a lot of stuff that we probably would have had to do anyway, maybe not to the same degree, but we would have still been grading roads during all those times and putting gravel on them and so forth. And so we managed to cover a lot of that with FEMA money. So we're getting that recovered, maybe as much as $115,000, $120,000 that we then can put into things like road maintenance going forward, some more flood projects, culverts and ditches and so forth, and the emergency fund. So we're reapplying that to things that have long-term benefit going forward and should reduce some of our costs. But the bottom line is we go forward, we've got to sort the revenue that we have across all of our functions, and they all have to compete with each other. And it's up to us to make the best best decisions that we can to make the most use of the revenue, the public's money that we have for our services. Maybe that'll help explain it a little bit. It looks like Lewis has an idea to offer here. Lewis?
Yeah, I'm sorry to inflict myself on you again in this regard, but I'll bring it up one more time. And that is a question to all of us. How big is a big enough savings account for these things that we're sort of holding money back for to pay for that we want? It sounds like up to half of that, Mike, is already sort of in line for something else that still leaves a couple of $1 million. I'm just really curious about what people think is a big enough savings account. Is it $4.3 million? Is it $10 million? What is it? And why is it that we're not, that we don't want to define that number? And I'll be quiet and listen until some members of the public ask me to bring it up again. Thanks.
I don't want to try to escape that question. I just was answering as best as I could. Within the various accounts, I think the thing for us to do is go through and point out which ones are account, already amount to that savings, and which are capital improvement and which are just sort of waiting to be assigned. I think we can get you a better answer if we have some time administratively here to outline it better for you. It's always a good question. We are lucky though that we are lucky to have the kind of reserves that we've got. Most cities would kill to have several years of their operating budget in the bank. We could essentially forward fund our government each year by funding it entirely with what we collected the last year and not even having to bet on what we were going to get for income. There are very few municipalities who could ever do that. So we've been pretty lucky here. I don't know. Did you want to try to answer that in more detail than I did using the,
Sure. So the mayor mentioned that we have our money broken out into different uses. And as you may remember, when the treasurer gives you the monthly balance sheets, there's several categories where we have money sitting. For example, our AMLIP accounts, our capital improvement for our current project, we have $5,000 sitting in there right now. But our long term, we have $388,888. We have in our repair and replacement account, $327,000. And we can go through, all the different AMLIP accounts to get us to that, 4 million plus number. So in reference to Councilmember Sharman's question, these are all accounts in which we can utilize these funds for these purposes. But we've chosen not to. For example, we know that the DRC has a lot of needs. They have a shredder and a baler that are in desperate need of replacement. We're trying to get $1 million for a new building. So how much do we need? I think kind of depends on how much are we willing to spend. We have some needs, we have some funds. I'm not sure that we have the willingness to spend that. We're talking about money just sitting in the account. There is an outline on how far you should be able to fund your operating costs through the government accounting gap, and I can't remember what the other two words for. Yeah. And I want to say it was three years worth. And I could get you that number if that's a critical piece of information. But anyway, that's just some general information where our funds sit and what we could use them for within those categories or move them around. I hope that helped.
It does help, except it didn't really answer my question. It's not a complicated question. I don't really want a breakdown of how, where, what they are, how much they are, what they're for. My question is simply, how much is enough? How much are we able and willing to define a ceiling for the size of the savings account at which we deem ourselves successful and have enough money on hand to cover these other expenses? Because it's not free money, you know, it comes from people. And I guess I'm not terribly comfortable with just growing for the sake of growth, whether it's the budget or the savings account or the services and things that we provide for ourselves, because I always hark back to what our vision statement is, and it doesn't presume, unbridled growth that's paid for with money. That's all.
There, with regard to, there are different pieces, I think, that we need to sort out in answering that question. And for example, how much is okay? How much do we need to have for repair and replacement of buildings and other things that we have, fire trucks and the like? And so we've got a repair and replacement line item, and there actually is a formula that we apply for putting money into that account that is based on the value of those items and their expected lifetime. And so we every year we budget according to that formula to put money into the repair and replacement account. So that amount, so there's a formula for that piece of it. But then there's also the question of, suppose we underestimated our costs and overestimated our revenue badly, and we were going to have a deficit in our operating budget. How much do we have to back that up? You know, that's another piece of it. So I think, Lewis, that's a real important question, and we've never really come down to a set amount. I think my way of thinking would tend to think 1 year's operating budget is a pretty good savings to back up the operating budget. In other words, if we got no income, we'd still have the operating budget covered out of savings. And we don't have a year, of course, when we have no income. So I think it depends on, in part, on what you're trying to cover. And so that's something that maybe we do need to sort out and outline a little better and continue this discussion on, so we have shared vision of what's how much we should have in the savings account. One thing, I think it's important that we not continually sock away money and run up the savings account, because that's public money that we've taken in taxes. Some of it's come through the federal government, but it was tax money. And we're not taking in money to just store it away in savings. We have revenue to provide services. So if we're not providing services with the money that we're with our revenue, then we're sort of cheating the public. We're collecting tax money from them and not providing the services. So it's prudent to have a certain amount in reserve, but then otherwise make sure that the rest that we have available to us, we're putting to good use for the public. And that can be in the operating budget or with capital projects that have long-term value to the community. Any other thoughts on that for now on those things? We can continue that discussion with some more. We'll provide you with some more background for that. I think it's an important thing to keep talking about. Okay, does anybody else have anything else they wanted to bring up before we end our work session? I'm not seeing any more, so I guess we'll call it an evening, and I thank everybody for their attention and interest in understanding the budget better. So I wish you all good evening.